Tonight, we want to get into the conclusion part of our study of Ecclesiastes, and that is, what did Solomon finally come to the idea of what life was all about? And you know that there is a conclusion that he comes to that's better than the thoughts that were going through his head before. And that has a lot to do with the fact that he was trying to reason through things without God in it. And now he's putting God back into his reasoning and his thinking and looking at life through the eyes of the Almighty, or with at least in having God in consideration. And so, after experimenting with and investigating life under the sun without God, he said, no, there is no way that life is worth living. And he has to tell you all about that, and then he's going to change his disposition. But there are basically four arguments in the entire book, four major concepts, and that is the monotony of life. And, you know, if you don't understand the monotony of life, you know, the humdrum, just think about the relationship between the word monotony and monotone. Just that monotone sound, no variation at all. And he kind of felt like that there was a monotony to life. And, of course, he talked about the vanity of wisdom and the futility of wealth and the certainty of death. All these things bothered him, and he wondered, considering the end of life, why that was, you know, why would life be worth living if this is all that there is to life? Now Solomon was ready for his conclusion and personal application. And what he did was present four pictures of life, and he attaches to each picture a spiritual concept, if you will. He finds out that there are challenging situations, that life is not just a humdrum, monotonous life, but with God there are challenging situations, and that wealth could be enjoyed and employed, and that it wasn't for naught. That life was better when he followed God's wisdom than if he was exercising man's folly. And so these four pictures that he comes up with, one is life is an adventure. Now, what we're going to talk about tonight is life is an adventure and life is a gift. We'll get to the next part next week. But we're going to live by faith and we're going to enjoy life. And that's what God wants you to do. Living by faith does not mean that you can't enjoy life. And if you miss out on the pleasure or miss out on the joy that's in life, then you're missing out and you're failing to acknowledge some of the wonderful blessings that God blesses us with each and every day. You know, I think about the things that God gives us. Opportunities and responsibilities go together. But a lot of times we look at responsibility as work. And we don't look at work as pleasure. How many of you in this room have a job you love? If you really are doing what you love, then it's not work at all. Some people don't have that privilege. Some people would like to have one of those jobs where they enjoy what they're doing. But God wants us to enjoy life anyway. What are we learning from daily life? And it's an adventure. It's not a humdrum life. It's not a monotone life. It's a life that's exciting. And I mean, just think about it. Didn't Jonah have an exciting life? I mean, he grew up and he toyed with his emotions. You know, there were all kinds of emotions. I'm sure that he experienced great joy, but on that particular occasion that God wanted him to go to preach to the Ninevites, he had a very strong dislike for them at that moment. And his strong dislike caused him not to want to obey God, but to escape him and run away. For being a prophet, he sure was ignorant about the fact he ran away from God, wasn't he? Getting thrown off the boat. And so he jumps into the sea, and the next thing you know, he's getting swallowed up by a great fish. By the way, I think the fish was big enough to swallow him. I don't think he was big enough to sit up Indian style in his belly and sit there and pray to God like this. You know, I think that the artist rendition has way too much room. But what I do think is that he was shrouded by the esophagus or the stomach of that great fish, and that it was a very uncomfortable... And let me even say this. With as much intake as that fish must have had during those 3 days. days, friends, in the belly of a fish. There is no way that you could live in the belly of a fish for 3 days except it be by the miraculous hand of God. Friends, it was a miracle. He got to live that. You don't tell me that's not exciting. That is exciting. That is an adventure. And even though it was punishment, it was still an adventure. But that's the Christian life. Think about the Apostle Paul for just a moment. I mean, he was persecuting Christians, but when he was converted, he was being persecuted. He had to outrun those Jews that were lying in wait for him. He was let down by a wall one night just to escape them. He preached till midnight. Got to see Eutychus fall out of the window and then went down and raised him from the dead. I mean, how is that not interesting? How is it not interesting to find out that every time you try to do something right publicly, you get arrested for it, and every time you get arrested for it, it winds up being an evangelistic opportunity for people to become converted to Christ? How is that not interesting? That God can take some of the most horrible trials of our life and turn them into conversions for other people. Friends, Christianity is exciting. You don't have to manufacture excitement for it to be exciting. Just live the Christian life, and it'll happen to you. If we look at verses 1 through 6 of Ecclesiastes chapter 11, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Now, casting your bread upon the waters has the idea of not throwing bread on the water, but it's kind of a Hebrewism for grain, that which you would make bread with. And in other words, it has the idea of a merchant putting his goods on a ship, but not on just one ship. It says on several ships, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you know not what disaster may happen on the earth. It says give a portion to 7 or 8. It has ships in mind here. And the idea is you would put your load on several ships and not on just one, because disaster could strike it. You don't put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. You think, well, that seems pretty basic, right? Well, let's just think about that for a moment. He who observes the wind will not sow. If your job as a farmer was to sow, there's a seed sower, and then there's a guy that comes in and reaps the harvest. There are two times that the weather could be against you. If you were sowing the seed, the wind could be against you. All right, because it blow your seed away from where it's supposed to go. And he who regards the clouds will not reap. What is it saying? The reaper, you know, a person who's sitting there based on the weather, he's saying, oh, the clouds look like there's going to be a rain today. Well, I'm not gonna go out and reap this harvest. Well, you know, you don't get any work done if you think that there's something bad's going to happen all the time. No, nothing will happen. There is a certain amount of risk to life, and we'll talk about that more in a minute as well. Verse number 5, as you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning, sow your seed, and at the evening, withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both will be alike, will both be good alike. F.B. Meyer, British expositor of the Old Testament, says, I don't want my life to end in a swamp. I think about that. You know, he says, I don't want to live a boring life. And that's really the pulled out of a context about his life. And he was saying that he did not want to live a life that had no excitement in it. He did not want to fail to live a life of faith for fear he'd miss out on it. And so I think about, you know, our longing for a sense of adventure. I don't know. Some people are not very adventuresome. Some people like a nice, calm, peaceful, don't ruffle any feathers, don't get out of your rut, don't mess with it. I like things nice and calm all the time. Maybe, you know, that there are some people in here that are like that. Chris Groda, on the other hand, likes experiences and is not opposed to getting out of his rut. I like to do some things that are different. I like coming back to my rut, but I do like to get out every now and then. So, you know, at some point next year I'll go to Singapore or go to a mission trip somewhere. Somebody always wants me to go. In all these years of ministry, I've never gone anywhere. And I've decided that I'm going to go somewhere now. Because when I go somewhere and I come back, I'm going to have a story to tell. I will have an experience under my belt. And it will enhance my ministry. And I'm not opposed to seeing what it's like to go to Jamaica sometime and see what it's like to have to take a shower at a certain time of day when the water will actually trickle out of the nozzle. It will be interesting for me to see what people live like in another culture and then come to appreciate mine even more. I remember as a child, I grew up on the tail of a time period where people weren't worried about their kids going out and riding their bikes and going into town and hanging out all day and just checking in every, you know, few hours or whatever. You know, we wouldn't let our kids do that today. Everything's a controlled environment now. But when I lived in Beeville, Texas, and we were a small town of 13,000, just like Mount Pleasant is, but I could ride my bike all over town. I'd go from one place to another, and I'd see different people, and I might go play with a few friends here and then some others later. One of the things that, and it's kind of strange, we had a three-story courthouse with a dome on top. Inside the attic of the courthouse was the brick wall of the base of that dome. And I know this is going to sound really funny, but for a long time as a child, I was scared of the courthouse attic. It was so big and monstrous in this dome, just to look at it. You know what? It was just kind of a strange thing to look at from a kid's perspective. But you know what? My goal as a kid was to be on some sort of covert operation and to sneak inside that court. We didn't have cameras back then either. So I could get inside that courthouse and I'd make my way up the three flights of steps and I'd look around and see if anybody was looking and I'd go around to the walls. I'd finally make it up to the third story and there was a closet door with another flight of steps up to the top into the attic. And then in the center of the attic was, like I said, this big brick wall, which was the base of that dome, and you could walk into it, and you could see the clock mechanisms, and there was a big circular stairway that would go around one side of it, and up at the top, there was a door that looked like a vent on a platform, and all the clock mechanism was up there, and you could unlatch that door, and you could get out and go around to the balcony portion of that courthouse. Well, my goal was to get into that courthouse and make it all the way up and to get over to the base, that brick wall of that dome that was in that attic and touch it and then run out. Why did that scare me? I don't know. But I'd get up there and I could turn on the light and peer into that attic, and as soon as I saw that dome, back down the stairs. Why those little things scared me, I don't know. But I wanted to do it, and eventually I did it. And that was a sense of adventure. Now, I'd go in every place that there was to go in town. If I could go in it, if it was unlocked, I'd go in. I'd probably be a prowl, you know, just loitering, prowling, doing all kinds of things that you probably wouldn't do today. But they probably made all the rules because of me. But anyway, I had that sense of adventure. But now that I'm a Christian, my sense of adventure has changed. And it's not necessarily about what I can go and explore and discover, although I do that. Richard Massey, you remember him, he held a gospel meeting here one year. There's this huge, one of the old Hilton hotels in Brownwoods, abandoned. It's like the old Grimm Hotel in Texarkana, although it's not as grim as the Grimm is now, but It was still busted out windows, tall and abandoned looking, and we wanted to see what the inside of that thing was like, and that door was open. We walked in and kind of looked around up in there, and I wouldn't have done it by myself, but I did it with him. And so if we were going to get in trouble, we were going to get in trouble together. But sense of adventure. Well, don't you understand that living the Christian life is a sense of adventure? If you contend earnestly for the faith, there's going to be adventure in it. Dealing with people is an adventure. You know, seeing people obey the gospel is an adventure. Seeing God's Word at work in their life is an adventure. And seeing people grow in the faith is an adventure. And making friends with God's children is an adventure. And it's so much fun, and we can go to heaven together. And are all the times and all the experiences that we have together always positive? No, we're going to shed a few tears along the way. And we'll have to work out a few problems, one with each other, along the way. When you get over to the next part in verses 1 and 2, he says, the merchant sending out his ships. He said, you think about this for just a moment. There could be reefs, there could be storms, there could be pirates, but he's going to send that stuff out anyway. In verses 3 through 6, the farmer sows his seed. Well, what about the weather? Well, there's blights and there's insects. You know, there's risks that are inherent to farming. Do we not farm because a drought could take place? No, we're going to sow our seed anyway. And so what I'm saying is that there are some things that he's talking about that have to take place even though there are some inherent risks involved. In verses 1 and 2, we read of the merchant ships. Now, we get the idea for those ships from 1 Kings chapter 10, verses 15 and 22. Obviously, Solomon had been involved in some of this trade. But you don't put all the load on one ship. You would spread it out in different ships. Likewise, Wiersbe says that true faith is not a presumption. You know, you're going to have some risk. True faith doesn't, you don't sit there and make a presumption that everything's going to be great. Some things about faith is a launch out into the deep. And that's why Jesus says you got to have faith like the size of a mustard seed. You'd be able to do some things. You'd be able to have that, you know, that mentality of the folks that had their talents and they could go and they could take their money and invest it instead of burying it in the sand. If all we have is a what if and what if and what if attitude, you know, and that keeps us back, that's not good. And then the other attitude that says, oh, I have so much faith in God that nothing is going to go wrong. Well, that's not true either. There's some things that could go unexpectedly. And you've got to be aware of that. This phrase, for you do not know, appears several times, at least three times in this context. And, you know, he talks about how that they're not, you know, we're ignorant of the future. We're basically ignorant of the future, but we don't let ignorance cause us to be careless or paralyzed. And we have to exercise caution and wisdom. And at the same time, we don't invest so much trust in the system or in life that we don't think anything bad won't happen. You know, it's almost like realizing that something bad could happen sometimes causes people just to freeze up and don't do anything. God doesn't want us to do that. He doesn't want us to be paralyzed with fear because things might not turn out right. You see, I think sometimes congregations are worried about that. They take on a new evangelistic work or some project in town and they think, well, that could backfire or something could go wrong. Well, I don't know what all could go wrong, but you know what? There's a whole lot of good that can happen. There's risk associated with doing mission work. When you go out door knocking, did you know that there's some risk that you're going to have? Like, for instance, let me tell you what, if you go door knocking with me to advertise the VBS, and I hope that you will, I want you to know that there's going to be some risk out there. There's going to be some risk that a whole lot of kids will come. Yes. And there's going to be a risk that some of the kids that come from the community may not behave very well. They're going to have issues. If you go door knocking in this community, you will risk running into a dog that's loose. Beware of the dogs. If you walk through this community, there is a chance that you could step into a hole and trip and fall. It's risk. If you go door knocking down there somewhere behind Pizza Hut in that neighborhood to the west there, maybe behind somewhere behind Suddenlink in that neighborhood, you might meet Jesus. Some of you haven't met Jesus, have you? Well, he's a long-haired, tattooed thing that thinks he's Jesus. And he's been on a few drugs. But you might meet him. And you might meet other people like him that'll have similar issues. And you think, do we really want to do that? Maybe a saturation mail out is not a bad idea. We could do that, but what fun would there be? So there's got to be some balance in our thinking. The farmer in verses 3 through 6. Daniel Webster said the founders of our civilization were farmers. I think that's an interesting, and it really was true. Most of the labor in this country in the 13 colonies was farmers. Thomas Jefferson said that farmers were the chosen people of God. I think he did that in a way that not really that he felt that way, but I think he felt that they were certainly very important people. And so the farmer is very important, but what about these clouds and these trees we read about? Well, clouds can represent the present. You know, they're fleeting. They come through and they're not there very long. These trees are permanent. You know, that could represent the past. But, you know, the past really can't be changed, but the present is an opportunity that must be seized. You know, we can talk about, oh, the clouds or the trees falling down and we could talk about the wind not being good for the sower and the clouds not good for the reaper. We can talk about all these different variables that we need to exercise a lot of caution in. But you can't wait for the ideal because it never happens. The ideal never happens. You're going to miss out on a lot of opportunities if you're waiting for the ideal. I'm going to tell you what, I had a friend from my hometown who in her mind had the picture of the ideal husband. She was trying to pick a man, to find a man her age that was as spiritually mature as her daddy. Her parents warned her time and again that there was a way to pick somebody who was spiritually minded, but that if she expected to find in a 20-something-year-old the wisdom and the faith of a 55-year-old gospel preacher, that she probably wouldn't find him. She's single today, and she's in her 40s now. Now, I want you to understand that, you know, if you're waiting for an ideal situation, I know gospel preachers that move about the country and they jump from one church to another all the time, just jumping from one situation to another, looking for the ideal job. Since when did sinners who were redeemed by the blood of Jesus Christ become the ideal situation? This is not the ideal situation. Heaven is the ideal situation, but we can't wait for it here on earth. Nobody knows the way of the wind, verse 5, or how a baby is formed in the womb. Psalm 139 says the same thing, incidentally. And nobody knows the works of God. We don't know what's going to happen in the future and why it's going to happen. God has a time and a purpose for all. This morning, I know it's going to sound ridiculous to you, and I'm going to run out of time in this lesson for sure, but I'm going to tell you something. This morning, I opened up my refrigerator, and a jar of marmalade fell out of the refrigerator and onto the floor. Before I realized that it had broke, I put my hand down on it, and I cut my finger. And I thought about that for a second, and I thought, you know, I'd much rather cut my finger. And I know this is there's no way for me to know this, unless I send it off to the laboratory. But you know what? I'm waiting on. I'm waiting out for a report to there's some kind of recall on orange marmalade next week. Because I really believe that little things happen for a reason. I'm not binding that on you. I'm not trying to convince you of that. I'm saying that I believe that everything happens for my benefit. I don't think that God is going to allow me to experience something that's not going to happen. Now, He could have just been telling me, Chris Grota, watch out before you pick up broken glass from now on. You know, don't be dumb. Or, you know what? There could have been another reason for it. I don't know. I have no idea why I wasted all that money on orange marmalade for it just to pop out of that freezer. Maybe He's telling me to put it back further in the refrigerator from now on. Don't leave it right there at the edge. There's a lot of things that you can think about. But the next time you think about why you have a flat tire, you might think about why you have a dead battery. It could be that providentially there is something saving you for some trouble right down the road that you don't know what you're going to avoid. I've seen people that have thought about running late before, and they were so aggravated that they'd run late only to find out that if they'd been where they were on time, they would have gotten into a major car accident. So we've got to stop and think about those things. Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 says we need to make the best use of the time because the days are evil. God tells us that we need to be good stewards of our time. We don't just sit there and wait on the ideal situation. We've got to act. Life is a faith adventure. The merchant investing today, not waiting for a perfect time. Farmer sowing various seeds in this text. And don't worry about what might happen. Let your faith work. Psalm 126, verses 5 and 6. Says, those who sow in tears shall reap in shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. Here is a beautiful picture of God blessing a nation and a nation of farmers with food and abundance. And we know that God is going to bless the faithful. Of course, there's no formula for success except perhaps the unconditional acceptance of what life and what it brings. Concert pianist Arthur Rubinstein said, "It tells us that life isn't perfect, but we ought to be blessed, or we ought to feel blessed with the ability to accept those things in our life that teach us great lessons." Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verses 7 through chapter 12, verse 8, light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all, but let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth, and walk in your heart in the sight of your eyes. This is actually a good thing, by the way, in this one. Not an evil thing here, but walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. You enjoy your youth, but don't get carried away. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. Who's he talking to? He's talking to young people. Put away vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the down of life are vanity, or the dawn of life is vanity. He says in chapter 12 and verse 1, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the reapers of the house tremble and the strong men are bent and the grinders cease because they are few and those who look through the window are dimmed. And the doors on the street are shut when the sound of the grinding is low and one rises up at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also of what is high and terrors are in the way. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags himself along and the desire fails because man is going to his eternal home and the mourners go about the streets before the silver cord is broken or snapped, and the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or at the wheel broken at the cistern. You know, at the well, there's a wheel with a rope on it there. He says, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to the God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. With this, there are three instructions. Three instructions. Rejoice, remove, and remember. But you know what? I'm going to tell you about rejoicing and then I'm going to quit there. As your days, so shall your strength be. Remember also your Creator in the days of thy youth. I had a very bad car wreck in 1995 in September, mid-September, and then I was incapacitated till mid-December. And that car wreck was kind of a wake-up call. Yes, I was in a wheelchair for 6 weeks, on crutches for another 6 weeks, and yes, I had to stay at my grandparents' house, and they had to nurse me back to health. I have talked about how I didn't like that situation, and I voiced it a lot. And my grandmother was very quick to respond, "Well, I don't like it much myself." So here she is trying to take care of me. Here I am just out of high school, and here's all this has happened. What I'm telling you is that sometimes when you're brought low in an accident like that, and you're forced to become dependent for a while, and you don't really know if you're going to walk again or if you'll ever walk normally again, you have a tendency to evaluate your life and what really matters. And you begin to take inventory of how you've acted and how you've treated other people around you. And I had come to the conclusion that I had not been cognizant and I had not remembered my Creator in the days of my youth. I had not spent a lot of time focusing on obedience. And by the way, when it says remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, He's talking about remembering Him with a spirit of obedience. He says, the days will come, the evil days will come, and the years will draw near of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. There is coming a time in life, in a general sense, where the pleasure that you have as a young person is not experienced as you age. What you find fun now, there are a host of older adults in this room that do not share your pleasure. There are some things that you enjoy taking on, some projects that you love to take on, and there's plenty of adults in here that are older that say, I'd love to hand it off to you. Been there, done that. But what it says here is it says that before the evil days come and the years draw near, they draw near. Days are going by and they're coming and they're going to get here quickly. And you are going to have a youth, a very short span of time compared to the category of young at heart. Not youth. Older people. And it won't take very long for the young folks and the teenagers to start calling you ma'am and sir. So, you remember all the commands of the Lord and do them, and that ye seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which ye used to go a-whoring. That is Numbers chapter 15, verse number 39. Ecclesiastes 11:9 says, rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thine heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart. Here he says, this is a good thing. Enjoy the pleasures associated with being young, but remember not to get carried away, because God will bring it all into judgment. Friends, God wants you to enjoy your youth. He does. He wants us to enjoy our youth. He wants us to enjoy every stage of life. And He says to the young people, He says, with privilege comes responsibility. You need to put anxiety of your heart. You need to put evil away from your flesh. Because you don't need vexation of spirit. Sorrow of spirit. Let me tell you something about that. That is a lot of regrets right there. Sin causes us to regret. If you don't have to regret making the wrong choice, and if you don't want to regret making wrong choices later in life, then don't make them now. Don't make them now. Now that's the lesson. I'm just going to quit it right there because that's our time. But I want you to understand something. Solomon is preaching to you. He's telling you there's a way to enjoy life. You can enjoy your life to the fullest, but you don't have to sin to get that enjoyment. It doesn't have to be that way. You can enjoy life and live a God, faith, adventure without hurting yourself or others or your relationship with God. If you want to enjoy adulthood without a lot of regrets,